Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
The armed gangs forced us to leave our homes. They destroyed our houses, and we're on the streets.
Haiti's under a state of emergency. Thousands of Haitians are fleeing rising gang violence. We'll go to the capital, Port-au-Prince, for an update. And to Nairobi to speak with a Kenyan lawmaker who opposes sending 1,000 Kenyan police to Haiti as part of a UN peacekeeping force. Then federal prosecutors in New York rest their case against former Honduran President Juan Orlando Hernandez, accused of turning the Central American country into a narco state. We'll get the latest. And we speak with the producer of the Oscar-nominated Holocaust film Zone of Interest, who raised Israel's assault on Gaza in his BAFTA Award acceptance speech last month.
Those walls aren't new from before or during or since the Holocaust, and it seems stark right now that we should care about innocent people being killed in Gaza or Yemen in the same way we think about innocent people being killed in Mariupol or in Israel.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The U.S. Supreme Court unanimously ruled Monday states do not have the authority to remove Donald Trump from the ballot under the Insurrection Clause of the 14th Amendment, which was written to prevent Civil War Confederates from returning to government. The court's ruling came after the state of Colorado attempted to take Trump off the primary ballot over his actions inciting the January 6th insurrection. In the majority opinion, justices wrote, quote, states have no power under the Constitution to enforce Section 3 with respect to federal offices, especially the presidency. The court's three liberal justices issued a concurring opinion warning the majority ruling, quote, attempts to insulate all alleged insurrectionists from future challenges to their holding federal office. Colorado Secretary of State Jenna Griswold responded to the court's ruling on MSNBC.
My larger reaction is disappointment. I do believe that states should be able under our Constitution to bar oath-breaking insurrectionists.
Millions of voters are heading to the polls today as 15 states are holding primaries and caucuses in what's known as Super Tuesday. In California, there's a four-way race to fill the seat of the late Senator Dianne Feinstein. Three Democratic Congress members, Adam Schiff, Katie Porter, and Barbara Lee, are on the ballot, along with Republican Steve Garvey, a former Major League Baseball player. The top two candidates, regardless of party, will face off in November. In Minnesota, some Democratic activists are urging voters to select uncommitted on the ballot to protest Joe Biden's support for Israel's assault on Gaza. Jelani Hussein is co-chair of the Abandon Biden campaign.
For Tuesday, it's not Minnesotan Muslims. It's not the Muslims in the United States. It's really the overwhelming majority of Democrats who believe that the president is on a very dark course. So many children have been killed in Gaza, over 30,000 dead. Every single day, the Israeli Defense Force is killing innocent people. And our president has stayed silent, has not done anything. In fact, we have done the opposite. We have stopped the world from calling and stopping this war and calling for an immediate ceasefire.
The World Health Organization is warning malnutrition in northern Gaza is, quote, particularly extreme as talks continue over a possible six-week temporary ceasefire. On Monday, Palestinian UN Ambassador Riyad Mansour warned children in Gaza are increasingly dying of starvation. He raised the case of Yazan al-Kafarna, an emaciated 10-year-old Palestinian child who died of severe malnutrition and insufficient health care.
Look at our children. Look at Yazan. Look what agony they are enduring. Dozen more children who died of malnutrition have been identified, and many more have died and are dying in darkness and destitution. This has to stop, for God's sakes, this has to stop.
A team of United Nations experts say they found, quote, reasonable grounds to believe that sexual violence, including rape, occurred on October 7th during the Hamas attack on Israel. The UN Special Envoy for Sexual Violence, Pramila Patton, spoke at the United Nations Monday.
We also found that there are reasonable grounds to believe that conflict-related sexual violence, including rape and gang rape, occurred during the 7th of October attacks in at least three locations, namely the Nova Music Festival site and its surroundings, Road 232 and Kibbutz Reim. And in most of these incidents, victims were first subjected to rape and then killed, and at least two incidents relate to the rape of women's corpses.
The UN expert, Pramila Patton, went on to say reports of rapes occurring at a fourth location, Kibbutz Be'eri, were unfounded. She said her team had also found, quote, clear and convincing information that some hostages held in Gaza had also suffered sexual violence. The UN experts did not conduct their own investigation, but instead wrote the report based in large part from conversations with Israeli institutions, including Zaha, an Israeli search and rescue organization that's been accused of spreading false stories about atrocities on October 7th. The UN team said it did not meet with any survivors of the sexual violence from October 7th. Patton also said her team received reports about imprisoned Palestinians facing sexual violence while in Israeli detention.
We nevertheless received, whilst there, from several interlocutors, information about cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment of Palestinians, men and women, in detention, also under the administrative detention, including sexual violence in the forms of invasive body searches, threats of rape, and prolonged forced nudity.
2 weeks ago, a group of UN experts expressed alarm over the abuse of Palestinian women and girls held by Israel. In a statement, the experts said, quote, we are particularly distressed by reports that Palestinian women and girls in detention have also been subjected to multiple forms of sexual assault, such as being stripped naked and searched by male Israeli army officers. At least two female Palestinian detainees were reportedly raped, while others were reportedly threatened with rape and sexual violence, unquote. The UN experts said that Israeli troops took photos of female Palestinian detainees in degrading circumstances and posted them online. Ukraine is claiming it sunk a Russian warship in the Black Sea. Ukrainian naval drones reportedly attacked the $65 million ship off the coast of Crimea. In other news from the region, more than 20,000 soldiers from NATO countries have begun a massive war exercise in the northern regions of Finland, Norway, and Sweden. 4,000 troops are taking part from Finland, which joined NATO last year and shares a 800-mile border with Russia. The head of the military junta in Chad's confirmed he'll run in the upcoming election for president. Mohamed Idriss Deby Itno made the announcement Saturday, just days after his chief rival was killed. Yahya Dillo died when security forces opened fire on the headquarters of his political party, the Socialist Party Without Borders. South Korea's government has announced it's moving to suspend the licenses of thousands of doctors who've been on strike for at least 2 weeks. About 7,000 doctors have defied orders by South Korean officials to return to work by the end of February. Doctors have been protesting the government's plan to increase medical school admissions by around 65%. They're demanding higher wages and a more manageable workload. Jack Teixeira, a member of the Massachusetts Air National Guard, has pleaded guilty to posting secret intelligence reports about the war in Ukraine and other issues online. He could serve 16 years in prison. He was indicted last year under the Espionage Act and has been jailed since April 2023 after he posted a series of highly classified Pentagon intelligence documents to a group of gamers on the messaging app Discord. And in Connecticut, five anti-nuclear activists connected to the Catholic worker movement were arrested Monday for blocking the gates of a General Dynamics plant in New London, where the Columbia-class nuclear submarines are being designed and constructed. During the action, a group of 20 protesters held life-sized images of J. Robert Oppenheimer, the father of the atomic bomb, with a banner reading, "Don't be a destroyer of worlds. Stop the Columbia sub." And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
We begin today's show in Haiti, where Port-au-Prince's international airport is reportedly under siege by armed gangs as Haiti is under a state of emergency. Tens of thousands have been displaced across the Haitian capital as they flee rising violence.
The armed gangs forced us to leave our homes. They destroyed our houses, and we're on the streets.
Over the weekend, Haiti's powerful gangs freed thousands from Haiti's largest prisons. The gang federation, known as leader known as Barbecue, claim responsibility and is calling for the ousting of unelected Prime Minister Ariel Henry. Gang members are reportedly uniting to bring down Haiti's de facto Prime Minister Henry, who's yet to return to Haiti since he traveled to Kenya last week to discuss a deal to send about 1,000 Kenyan police to lead a UN peacekeeping force. The Kenyan High Court in January ruled the plan unconstitutional. For more, we're joined by three guests. In Nairobi, Okende Omolo is a Kenyan parliamentarian who opposes the police deployment to Haiti. In Washington, D.C., Jake Johnston is with us. He runs Haiti Relief and Reconstruction Watch blog for the Center for Economic and Policy Research, author of the new book, Aid State, Elite Panic, Disaster Capitalism, and the Battle to Control Haiti. But first, we go to Port-au-Prince, Haiti's capital, to speak with Monique Kleska, a Haitian pro-democracy advocate who worked for many years with UNICEF and the United Nations overall, worked there for 15 years. We welcome you back to Democracy Now!, Monique Kleska. Can you talk about what's happening on the ground as the images we see are the airport overrun and in the streets of Port-au-Prince, people fleeing for their lives?
Thank you for inviting me. Thank you. It is a desolation that we are feeling. It is a terror that we are living, and it's horrifying what we are going through. Since last Thursday, there has been an assault on different neighborhoods, different areas, and state institutions. And yesterday was the big assault then on the airport. So people cannot travel. People are scared. People cannot go to work. And on Saturday night, it was the jail. There was a massive assault on the Port-au-Prince jail, and there are about 4,000 prisoners who are out in the streets somewhere, and among them, presumed rapists, murderers, kidnappers, etc. So we are terrorized. We are terrorized in our homes. But what I want to say is that, and it's important to say that, we have been terrorized for the last 30 months of Ariel Henry's government. There have been more massacres under Ariel Henry than there were under Jovenel Moïse, that had 13 massacres. So we have been in a state of terror, horror. Our people are dying. Our sisters are being raped. Our children are going to sleep hungry for the last 30 months or more. So we are under a regime of bandits, bandits in ties, bandits in shorts. But bottom line, we are hostages of about maybe 3,000 men who are running the country, either in gangs with ties or in white shirts or in gangs in the slum areas, roaming the streets and terrifying us. That is the situation we are living right now in Haiti. And let's be clear, the Biden administration has its hands in the bloodshed, because we, at least from the Montana Accord, have been saying since August 2021, 2.5 years ago, that this must stop. We have an alternative solution. We must get those criminals out of offices. We must get those criminals out. So the Biden administration is paying the price, because there is no doubt in my mind that they bear a huge responsibility, along with the UN, along with France, along with Canada. But the Biden administration has its knee on our necks, because we would not be here if they had listened to us Haitians, who have said for a long time, this is unacceptable. This criminal regime is unacceptable to us Haitians. Throughout Haiti, Haitians have demonstrated and said Ariel Henry must go. So he can stay in Kenya, he can stay in Washington, wherever he is, he can stay there. But we need new blood in the governance system of Haiti. We need visionaries, men and women who can provide for Haitians.
Monique Glasscott, you focused. You said on the criminals in white suits or in white shirts, but the focus in this in most of the media coverage about Haiti here in the United States is on the gangs in the street. Are all these gangs the same? Are there distinctions between them? Because some people claim that some are more political than some of the other gangs, especially, for instance, this Jimmy Cherizé and his group. How do you regard this situation on the street with these gangs?
I am here to say that the government, coming from there are UN reports that have said that the former president of Haiti actually formed a gang and armed gangs. So since 2011, it has been a criminal regime that has armed the gangs. And now perhaps the gangs have felt stronger and they are going about in their whatever it is, their criminal business. But the point I am making is government, people in power, president, prime ministers, ministers. There is even a document from the Yale Law School Clinic and human rights organization in Haiti that said it's a crime against humanity under Jovenel Moïse, the massacre in La Saline, where 71 people were killed. So we are talking about a construct. This is not something that happened out of the blue. These government officers, as well as prime minister, president, and some economic oligarchs, have financed the gangs, they have armed the gangs, they have given them even contracts to distribute food in neighborhoods, etc. So we must be clear that the gangs have been instrumentalized in the past, created, armed to terrorize us so that they could keep power. So now the gangs have gained their independence and maybe they have their political whatever. But I think the main culprit here is government that started to finance them, senators. A lot of them are under sanction for arming the gangs or for giving them money. A lot of the huge economic players in Haiti are also under sanction. Even a bank director is under sanction, even though it is not the United Nations sanctions. So let's be clear about this. There is no doubt in my mind about this, that the gangs with white shirts or whatever shirts and ties are also extremely involved, not only involved, but responsible for this. And the United States knows this. We have told this to Assistant Secretary Brian Nichols. We have told this to Barbara Feinstein at the State Department. We have told this to Dan Erickson, who is now at the White House. We have told this. The Biden administration knows this, that it is a criminal regime, that it is financing, that it is supporting, that it is helping to kill us. And we say, it's enough. We need new leadership in Haiti. We need different governance that respects our human rights. This is unattainable. This is unbelievable. It is inadmissible. We do not want this, and we are into resistance mode. We are saying, no, we do not want this. And the Biden administration will pay for some of this, because there are 1.5 million Haitian in the United States, and they are beginning to threaten not to vote for Biden. So vote elections are decided by a few thousand votes. So 1.5 million Haitians, that means a lot. They must reverse course. They must.
Yeah, I'd like to bring in Jake Johnston, also the author of the new book, Aid State, Elite Panic, Disaster Capitalism, and the Battle to Control Haiti. Welcome, Jake Johnston. Your assessment of the situation right now in Haiti, and the steps that need to be taken to restore some sense of safety to the population and an actual functioning government?
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. I mean, I think when we look at Haiti, we have to understand some of the roots of what we're seeing today. And at the heart of this is a broken social contract, a state that is no longer representative of or accountable to the population. And that has created the dynamics, the broader situation that has allowed this situation to spiral the way it has. And so when you look at how to address that, you have to start there. And I'd echo Monique's calls to focus on the political environment, right? We can't divorce insecurity from the political environment. And you look at what's happening now. I mean, this doesn't happen in a vacuum, right? The armed groups don't seize control, don't take this without at least some willingness or abandonment on the part of police hierarchy and government authorities. And so to begin with, there has to be an acceptance of responsibility. I think one of the most shocking things over the last 4 or 5 days has been the absolute total silence from the government, right? Ariel Henry is not even in the country. The state of emergency was announced by the Minister of Finance in a press release. And so there's really just, again, a total abandonment on the part of state authorities. And like Monique said, you know, this is not a crisis entirely created in Haiti or by Haitians, right? We have to understand that this has been a long time coming, and it's been a process stoked and perpetuated by the international community, and namely the United States. You know, we could go back to Haiti's history, to its founding, first independent black republic, successful slave revolt, the U.S. occupation, but we don't need to go back that far into history to see this history of intervention. The 2004 coup d'etat, the overturning of election results in 2010, and the United States' insistence on moving forward with this current government against all odds and against the very clear expression from the Haitian people. And so unless that begins to change, you know, it's extremely unlikely that the situation on the ground meaningfully improves.
I wanted to ask you about the role of a former president, Jean-Bertrand Aristide, obviously removed from office twice, but at the same time, there are reports that he has had some kind of an accommodation with Ariel Henry, and that his family, Lavalas, is basically on the sidelines these days. Could you, what information do you have about that?
You know, I think you have to, you know, it's a murky political environment right now. There have been political negotiations and horse trading happening for 2 years. And I think, you know, that breakdown, the inability of Ariel Henry to actually come together and reach an accord and meaningfully balance power with alternatives, right? Like, there's not a single elected official in the country. Power has been consolidated under one unelected person who's had questions over his legitimacy from the moment he stepped foot in the premature, right, in the prime minister's office. And so, of course, many political parties are trying to push, trying to prod. I think Femi Lavalas has certainly been one of them. But where this actually ends up, I mean, I think everyone is clear. And I think in a lot of ways, what we're seeing right now is a fight between protecting the status quo, trying to put the train back on the track, so to speak, or actually building something new, right, refounding the state and rebuilding that social contract that has been broken.
I wanted to go to Jimmy Charizier, known as Barbecue, speaking Friday.
Not my We ask the Haitian National Police and the military to take responsibility and arrest Ariel Henry. Once again, the population is not our enemy. The armed groups are not your enemy. You arrest Ariel Henry for the country's liberation. These weapons that we have are not here to hurt our brothers who come from the same milieu as us. The poor take the streets and they trust us. These weapons are our symbol of freedom. With these weapons, we will liberate the country, and these weapons will change the country.
Monique Leska, Barbecue, or Charizier, is the leader of the gang federation G9 Family and Allies. They've joined together all the gangs. This is significant. And he's saying that they won't let Henri back into the country. Can you talk about the significance of this alliance and who he is?
Well, I don't want to talk about who he is, because I think he said who he is and he showed who he is. And he has been showing who he is for years now. What I want to say, though, is that I don't believe in violence. And the Montana movement that I'm part of does not believe in violence, and we condone violence. Guns cannot be symbols of a freedom. Guns cannot be that. So another question is, where are they getting all of these ammunitions? Where are they getting all these guns? M14, M1, Kalashnikov, etc. Where are they getting them? So I think it is important to say that the guns are coming from mostly from Miami, from the United States. Some are coming from the Dominican Republic, through the Dominican Republic, but there. So I think that is the central issue there, you know, in terms of the where are the armed groups, because they say they are armed groups and they claim that and they have their project. But where is it coming from? And what I'm saying is we have been kidnapped. We have been killed. Our sisters are raped. So let's be very clear about this. The gangs, I cannot say much more about the gangs other than what their actions have shown. What I know, though, is that in Haiti, they have been supported by the governors of Haiti, the leaders like Ariel Henry. And the social justice agenda that we have, people are not eating, people don't have health care, people are not going to school, is extremely important. And that's what must be put forward. The issue of youth in Haiti, 65% of the Haitian population is under 24 years old. So when you hold a gun next to them, as opposed to feeding them, then very often they might go the other way towards the gun. And what we need to do is have a leadership, men and women, who can say that we will respect that social contract that Jake Johnson is talking about to remove this massive inequality, respect the human rights of Haitians, and feed Haitians, give them health care, particularly the youth. Two-thirds of the country is under 24 years old. We need to focus on them rather than focus on the gangs and everything else. And that's why we need to break what is right now a government that is killing us, literally and figuratively, with the help of the UN and the United States, the Biden administration. That is the focus for me.
I wanted to bring in Otiende Omolo, who is a Kenyan MP, member of parliament. Ariel Henry was last seen in Kenya, sealing the deal of sending 1,000 Kenyan police as part of a UN force, peacekeeping force, to Haiti. And yet, the Kenyan High Court in January ruled the plan was unconstitutional. You had a group of Kenyans go to Haiti to investigate the situation. They came back almost immediately, within hours, then went to Washington to work out the deal. And one of those Kenyans, 39-year-old Nyamato Walter, was found dead in his Washington, D.C. hotel room. Otiende Omolo, can you talk about the plan? And are 1,000 Kenyan police being sent to Haiti?
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me. The sense in Kenya is that the idea of sending 1,000 police officers to Haiti is unpopular. That is the general sense. But I would say the move is wrong in at least four fronts. First, it is legally unfounded. Secondly, the process itself is flawed. Thirdly, the rationale is quite shaky. And more importantly, the arrangements that seem to have been put in place are weak. In the first place, yes, the court in Kenya declared the process unconstitutional and improper. And that declaration was based